This is Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. As the nation looks to its future following the 2020 election, we turn to history to better understand how our state was shaped by two significant leaders, former governors Pat Brown and his son Jerry Brown. Earlier this week, I spoke with Miriam Powell, author of The Browns of California, the family dynasty that transformed a state and helped shape a nation. On Thursday, she will speak at a CSU Bakersfield public history event about the impact these governors had on the criminal justice system. We talked about the upcoming event and her thoughts on the election.
Given the extensive research that you've conducted about California's history, I'd like to start by hearing your thoughts about the 2020 election and how it could potentially shape the future of the state of California.
It's very interesting trying to make sense of what are in some ways some extremely progressive positions that California voters took, as they often have in the past, and then some much less so, and particularly in the propositions where we saw a lot of the causes that labor and that other that progressives had pushed going down to defeat. And I'm looking at this and seeing that I think that fear was a really big motivation this year. In the sense that people, particularly people who had a lot of money, and Prop 22, which was the Uber and Lyft prop, is probably the best example of that, where there was a record spending of $200 million, but also Prop 15, which is the tax proposal, and we still don't quite know where that's ending up, but it looks like it's not going to pass. So that these appeals to people that play to their fears, which is always true in elections. So the fear that you're going to have to pay more in taxes, the fear that this is a first step towards repealing Prop 13, the fear that Uber and Lyft are going to disappear if this proposition passes. I think we saw a lot of that. And again, those are always common in elections, but I think it resonated really deeply in a time when we are, as a state, you know, struggling so much with the pandemic and with all of the economic consequences of it and high unemployment and real economic concerns and worries on people's part.
So we're talking now in advance of an event hosted by CSU Bakersfield, where you will be speaking about the legacies of Governors Pat Brown and Jerry Brown, and particularly about the impact that they had on the criminal justice system. I was wondering if you could give us a bit of a preview of what you're going to talk about.
Sure. And I think I'll segue right out of last night's results, because the one area that I didn't mention just now was criminal justice, where there was a very strong vote against Proposition 20, which was a measure put on the ballot by law enforcement that would have rolled back a lot of the criminal justice reforms that were enacted by the legislature and by popular vote under the last two terms of Governor Jerry Brown. The former governor spent some of his hard saved money to fight Prop 20 and was successful. And we also saw the success of Prop 17, which would give felons the right to vote. So we saw on criminal justice a real continuation of a swing in the state that was, I would say, encouraged by and helped along by Governor Brown in the last two of his historic four terms. And that was a shift in a real view of the criminal justice system that is consistent with a national trend, but I think California is really leading on this in the sense of redefining even the nature of punishment. The nature of the prison system, and that the point is not just punishment, but rehabilitation. I will read it. Jerry Brown tweeted after the results that in voting down Prop 20, California voters signaled once again that they believe most human beings can turn their lives around if given the chance. And I think that sentiment of the belief in the power of redemption and the importance of hope is very significant and really an important piece of his legacy in the last few terms. As governor, he granted more pardons and commutations than anyone else, or probably most governors put together in modern times. That's an evolution for him from, you know, as you know, he was governor the first time around from 1975 to 1980 through 1982, and had quite a different stance on criminal justice then, also more in keeping with the times. It was the beginning of the onset of a real, the buildup of the criminal justice system and the mass incarceration that we are now retreating from. So I guess I've answered your question a little bit in reverse order, but one of the themes of my book, which looks at the impact of the four generations of Browns, but particularly Pat Brown and Sherry Brown, their impact on the criminal justice system is really profound. Pat Brown as well, in terms of both his support of criminal justice policies and his going back to his early years as San Francisco District Attorney, which was the first office he won, in which he was in some ways a prototype, an early progressive prosecutor who defined his job as helping especially the youth of San Francisco to stay out of trouble. So he was a little bit ahead of his time on that. And then as Attorney General, and then as governor for 8 years. So between the two of them, I mean, they have governed the state for 24 years, and each of them was Attorney General as well. So there's quite an enormous impact on the criminal justice system as a whole. And the one other piece that I wanted to just throw out there is their impact on the courts, because each of them appointed a lot of judges, Sherry Brown in particular. I think he has said that he appointed more than 1,000 judges. Each of them had a very strong impact on shaping the California Supreme Court, and Sherry Brown getting to do that twice in very different ways, the second time than the first time. And in particular, Sherry Brown's vision of the need for the bench to reflect all of California was something that I think we kind of take for granted today in a lot of ways. But when he brought that with him into the governor's office the first time in 1975 and began to appoint, for example, defense attorneys, which was pretty unheard of at that time, that was really changed. It was the beginning of a real change and a sort of revolution in how we think about the courts and the bench. And he appointed the first woman, the first African-American, and the first Latino to the California Supreme Court, and then continued in all of his four terms really to appoint a very sort of interesting mix of judges that was a break from the past.
Definitely ahead of his time in that regard.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Proposition 20 earlier. I'd like to talk about another proposition that was on the ballot that was also connected to Jerry Brown, and that's Prop 25, which would have put into effect a law that Governor Brown signed back in 2018 to abolish the cash bail system. Mm-hmm. Voters, it appears, have rejected that proposition. So the cash bail system remains intact. Thinking about Brown's legacy, how significant was this defeat?
I think it's a real setback for the efforts to change the bail system and to eliminate cash bail, because I think it's unlikely that the legislature is going to take this up again anytime soon, given what we saw, which was essentially the bail bond industry's ability to force a vote that overturned it. There's an odd, very strange bedfellows in the opposition to Prop 25, because the original law that Governor Brown signed was very much a compromise. And it was a compromise because that was what the key players thought that they could, was as much as they could get through. But a lot of the more liberal and progressive groups that had supported the effort to eliminate cash bail were opposed to the law that finally passed, because they felt it gave too much discretion to judges, and there were issues with it where they did not feel it went far enough. So those groups, they opposed Prop 25 because their feeling is that it was a bad law and that it's more important to defeat the bad law and to come back and try to get a better law the next time. Maybe that strategy works, but it seems rather unlikely that they're going to get through a more liberal version of that. So I think that's a setback for the efforts to eliminate cash bail, although, you know, to some extent, some of it is going on anyway in a lot of parts of the state because of the pandemic. where the Judicial Council mandated no bail release for certain crimes early on during the crisis, and many counties have continued that. So I think we will continue to see efforts to change the bail system. I also think it's another example, which is not uncommon in California, where sometimes propositions are so confusing that it's very hard for people to know what they're voting on. And we had a lot of that this year.
Certainly did.
So, sometimes they're deliberately misleading. But again, in this case, I just had to think it through again to say that you had to vote yes on Prop 25 in order to be in favor of eliminating cash bail.
Right.
So I think that, there was just a lot of confusion. And again, a part of the community that one would have expected to turn out to support that was actually actively lobbying against it. So you had the, the more liberal wing of the Democratic Party in some ways in alliance with the bail bond industry to defeat this, and that did it. So I don't think we've seen the end of that issue, but it may be a while before it comes back on the state level for sure.
Well, Miriam Powell, author of The Browns of California, The Family Dynasty That Transformed a State and Helped Shape a Nation, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You guys are one of my favorite public radio stations.
We appreciate it. Thank you.